I'm Patsy Parton here at the Vanderbilt Virtual School, and we're located in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a beautiful spring day in Tennessee. Trees and flowers are blooming, and we're going to have almost in the 80s today. Unbelievable. We're loving it. So we hope it's a beautiful day where you are, too. This is a very special video conference, one that I have been very excited about bringing to you. Actually, one of my good friends, a professor here at Vanderbilt, Carol Swain, arranged, made this connection with Kanayo and me. Kanayo Odo is a law student here at Vanderbilt University. He is from Nigeria. He went to Howard University for his undergraduate. And your master's too?
Master's as well.
And master's as well. And chemical engineering?
Chemistry undergrad and chemical engineering master's.
Okay, chemistry undergrad and chemical engineering and master's. And he is set to graduate from law school here in May. And he plans to return to Nigeria in June. And as an insider, as somebody that came from the land, he has insight into some issues facing Africa today. And we are so glad to have him with us. As you know, Africa has had more than its share of civil unrest and poverty and AIDS and other devastating plagues and diseases. Even now, we know that there is... can somebody mute your mic? There's like a terrible unrest and genocide in Darfur. We know about Rwanda. We know about all the different things that have happened in your lifetime and my lifetime. So we're here to listen to Kanayo today talk about this as from his own perspective. He plans to go back to Nigeria. We were just talking about how that maybe we could use video conferencing once he's there to not only with the schools but with some of the leaders there. So we hope that will happen. Thank you again
so much.
As soon as the kids will have some questions, I'm sure, when you get through too. All right. Go ahead.
Well, hello. After the fine introduction, I think I will go on to talk a bit about myself, maybe about a minute or two, to say that I spent 20 years of my life, I was born and raised in Nigeria, I spent 20 years of my life hoping to go to medical school. I did start medical school in Nigeria, I spent a year. It's different, we go by the British system. After a year and a half, because of the civil unrest, we had a dictatorship, and the dictatorship did not go down well with most of the Nigerians. As you know, most dictatorships breed or function on corruption. We see the same thing in Iraq. I'm sure most of you are aware of the war in Iraq. This is the trend with most dictatorships. So we had our own fair share in Nigeria, and because of that, I had to come down to the United States. I was fortunate enough, through family resources and God's grace, to come to the United States to study. I went into chemistry hoping to go into medical school, but things didn't quite turn out the way. I think providence, maybe God's hand. So I went on, did chemical engineering. I like politics. I am one who is deeply disturbed about what is going on in Africa, West Africa to be precise. I have a passion for what is going on in Africa. So, you know, my dad sort of veered me into law, and law is the basis of any functioning society. And I went into law school, I took the exams, did pretty well, and I was given admission into Vanderbilt Law School. And that is what I've been here for, this is my third year. I will be graduating in May. Now, we're here again to discuss about the issues in Africa. What are the issues in Africa? I mean, we hear in the news about diseases, wars based on genocide, bad governance, bad government. And the question is, why? Why is it one continent? One continent. There is a misconception that Africa is one big country like the United States, but it's actually not. Africa has, I think, if I'm not mistaken, more than 40 or 50 countries. Mm-hmm. It's something that they keep breaking up.
And I listed all of them on the website for them to see currently what the countries are today.
Yes, and each time, we find that those countries can't govern themselves well. And the question again is why? In the past 9 months or 1 year, I have been disturbed greatly by the problems facing Africa. So I have gone into deep research. I tried to compare why the West, the United States, England, or Europe have managed to function a lot better than African societies, countries in Africa. And it boiled down to some issues. One, we had, Africa has like three stages or three phases. You have the pre-slavery, slavery, and then post-slavery. Now, pre-slavery, there were the issues, but now we have to deal with what is at hand now. What are the problems now facing Africa? After independence, a lot of African countries gained independence after World War II. They started to fight for their independence. We find a lot of the colonial powers at the time merged a lot of countries in Africa together. So in Nigeria, for instance, we have six countries as one country. In other words, you have Igbos, and Igbos are very different from Yorubas. We have Igbos, Yorubas, Hausas, and there are three other minor ethnic groups. They have emerged together to form one country. Now, for that reason, it seems a lot of African countries have not been able to function well. Now, you think about it. If you had the United States, right? Think about what will happen if you had the United States merge to Mexico and Canada as one big country. Do you really think it will function the way it is today? And another thing we should think about too is Europe. We have France, England, Germany. If you had them together as one big country, there's no way they'll be able to function or to be as productive as they are today. So the question is, why don't we just split a lot of African countries into the little units to make them function the way Europe has functioned? Because England is a really small island, France, Spain, a lot of European countries. But this is the issue. Now, what happens? And I'm going to use Nigeria as a case study. It's a place I'm familiar with. Another interesting thing I think you all must have heard about was Liberia. They are actually, the former Liberian president is under trial now at The Hague. They finally arrested him. But the issue is, in Nigeria, you have six ethnic groups. So what happens is, you have a country. Now, that country has a natural resource, oil, in the case of Nigeria. In Sierra Leone, it's diamonds.
But Nigeria is oil rich,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it's really, really an oil rich country. I think we're the sixth or seventh largest producing oil nation in the world. So, anytime.
Excuse me just a minute. I'm sorry to interrupt, but somebody has their microphone open and it interferes with other students listening. So make sure that you have muted your microphone. Thank you.
Okay, so anytime you have a country like Nigeria trying to split, you have those regions in the world. Those regions in Nigeria that do not produce those natural resources, they don't want to break. They choose not to break because they are very, very reliant on the natural resources. So what happens is you have people fighting. And that's why we have a lot of the issues we have in Africa today. This is just, I've given you a case study of Nigeria, because in Nigeria you have, the oil is produced in the Niger Delta region. The Niger Delta region do not want to be part of Nigeria as it stands today, or they are shouting seriously and complaining about the corruption going on in government. And they want to break, but the other parts of Nigeria do not want to break. Some parts of Nigeria, at least, don't want to break off, don't want the Niger Delta region to leave them because of the oil there.
Because they're so, that's where the resource is.
Exactly. And everyone is reliant on those resources. And this is the problem with a lot of African countries. The same thing in Rwanda. You know, you have the Hutus, the Tutsis, you have two different ethnic groups. You have in Sierra Leone the same thing. So if I were to put the issue in one word, it would be corruption. Corruption. And the question again is, why have we not been able to stifle corruption? Why have we not been able to stop the corruption? Studying the circumstances, I think we haven't been able to fight corruption because, now you remember I said, when the colonial powers left, they put countries together. So in Nigeria, you have like six major ethnic groups together. So it would be like having Europe, France, England, Germany as one country. Now, the only way to hold that country together would be to have a dictator. Now, once you put a dictator, what dictators do is they rule by strong arm, or they rule by force. And we see that in Iraq, right? You have the Shia and the Sunni. When the British left, I think in 1914, if I'm not mistaken, they put the Shia, different religious group, merged with the Sunni, another different religious group. And now you needed a strong arm. And the strong arm, a dictator, came in the form of Saddam Hussein. Now, Saddam Hussein was the only force that could hold those two different groups together. And now that is the same thing we have in a lot of African countries. Now, what happens with dictatorships? The dictatorships or the dictators hold the country with force. And after some time, I don't know if you all have heard the saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. What happens is the dictators have so much power, they need money to play the game that they want to play. You have corruption in the system. Then corruption breeds, and after some time, it becomes a way of life in the society. A lot of African countries gained their independence in the 60s, the late 1950s, up until the 70s. And even in the case of Zimbabwe, I think 1981. So we now have this system of corruption ingrained. There's a culture of corruption. And this culture of corruption is what has ruined and has caused a lot of ruin to a lot of African countries. Injustice. Anywhere you have injustice, you will have strife. And that is one of the greatness or uniqueness with a lot of Western nations and what you have here in the U.S. True, every society, man, the way we are created, or human beings, we seek our selfish goals. But you have to check that with enforcement of laws, rule of laws. You have policy. When you put the nation first, you make laws that puts the nation first and try to curb the excesses of human beings. Now, there is a crime boss in Nigeria who is working currently with the UN. And he said the average in Africa, right, we lose $140 billion to corruption. Mm. $140 billion corruption. Now, there is nowhere on the face of the earth where you have corruption where such society will function. Now, let me give you a classic case. Now, imagine your classroom. in a class of, say, 40 students or 30 students. You have the fellow sitting in front of the class, say he's the brightest student, right? And the people around him, say the first group of students in the front are the brightest students, right? And then the people behind are just not as bright as the ones in front. Now, and then you have the rest at the back. Now, suppose after every exam, your professor grades, say, the lady in the green shirt and the guy in the red shirt, gives them the best grades, even when you know you all at the front are the better students. What happens? When you have corruption, say the people at the back give the principal or the teacher bribes, what happens? The people in the class start to agitate, they get upset, understandably so. And for that reason, you'll have a lot of strife. And after some time, you'll find that the students won't be able to function as a class anymore. People will hate themselves, people will hate the students, and there will be wars, strife, reactions, and that is the common trend. That is what corruption does to any society. So the issue now is, how do we deal with corruption? Unless we have tough enforcement of laws in Africa, and the Western government, the UN, must play a role. How do they play their role? Now, we have issues with healthcare. In Africa, I'm sure a lot of you would have read and will know now, the healthcare system is really, really bad. Now, the people the leaders, because of corruption, have made a lot of money. When they fall sick, they fly out of the country. They come to the West, they go to England, they come to the United States, they go
for
to France.
For their health care.
To get treatment. Now, the poor folks in Nigeria, or in Sierra Leone, or in Guinea, or in Algeria, or Angola, those places can't fly out because they don't have that kind of money. So, if the UN and the Western government, and someday some of you or all of you will become leaders, someday all of you will be in a position to make a change. And the thing will be, if they were to ask me, my opinion will be to stop those governments or those who are in power from getting access to healthcare system abroad. So they must now invest in their various countries to improve the healthcare system there.
For everybody,
to make it accessible to everybody. But then there's even a greater issue, which is, how do you make the system work? A lot of African nations are tropical regions. And in the tropics, you have a lot of diseases like malaria, cholera, typhoid. And those issues are really not medical issues or medical problems or issues you should deal with first as medical problems. They're actually engineering or environmental engineering issues. Up until the late 1800s in the United States, we had malaria, cholera, down in the south. And how did they eradicate it? Engineering, environmental engineering was used to eradicate these diseases. The same thing would have to be employed back in African countries. And the question is, it seems we know the problem, we know the solution, right? I've just told you what can be done to make a viable healthcare system work. Because I remember when I was in Nigeria about, 10, 15 years ago, when a lot of the sicknesses, a lot of the young people get, and a lot of Nigerians or Africans get, is malaria, typhoid, cholera, right? So what happens is, when the real diseases come, like cancer, diabetes, the system, the hospitals can't function because they focus so much on those petty diseases like malaria, typhoid, cholera. Now, for the healthcare system to work, we're going to have to try to eradicate those minor diseases, like they did here in the U.S., like they did in the southern part of the United States, through environmental engineering. Now, why don't they do it again? Why can't we address those issues in Nigeria? It's the same thing, corruption. Corruption. When the leaders get the money, they split it among themselves to consolidate or to hold on to the power that they have. It's a weakness that human beings have, but for some reason, a lot of African countries have not been able to put their countries first. And I think that may have to do with the fact that there are a lot of countries in one country. So when you have a country like, say, Sierra Leone, you have like 6 or 7 ethnic groups. Those ethnic groups are competing against each other. So when you have a president from one ethnic group, he tries to take care of his own ethnic group at the expense of the other ethnic groups. In order to do that, he needs money. To get money, he loots the treasury of his country. And there is a philosopher, he's a great philosopher, as a matter of fact, in the U.S., when the Federalists, a lot of founding fathers in the United States, you quoted some of his works, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, the fundamental political unit is the family. Is the family. And once you have that kind of, so now we have the family. Once you have corruption, it goes up from there. There's no way you can have a functioning society with a corrupt elemental or elementary unit. I'm open to questions.
Great. Okay, let me make sure everybody unmute your mic and we'll start calling on you. Can you unmute your mic? And we're going to start with Linwood Public School in Lincoln, New Hampshire. If you will unmute your mic, and you have a couple of questions.
Well, we have a question.
Okay.
You've spoken about your feelings about closing the borders for medical access for the leaders. How do you feel about us closing our borders for Africans for education? Would that improve the educational system?
100%. 100%. Yes. Yes, it will. It will. It will. It definitely will. It definitely will. As a matter of fact, I think that will do a great good as well.
Yes. Okay, did you have another question, New Hampshire?
No, we're all set for right now, thank you.
Okay, I'll come back to you. Upton Middle School in St. Joseph, Michigan. Can you unmute your mic?
Yes.
Everybody else mute your mic except St. Joseph. Okay?
Okay, Upton's ready.
All right.
How can we help with corruption?
The brightest are in the front, I'm sure.
Yeah, the brightest.
I'm sorry, did you hear our question?
Yeah, Upton? Someone else has their mics unmuted, and I need everyone for this.
Lancaster,
you need to mute your mic. I'm sorry. Because it's bleeding over and we're not being able to hear Upton. Okay, Upton, go ahead.
How can we help with corruption?
How can they help with corruption?
Well, you can help. The UN has taken the first step, which is there's now a treaty, a document that is signed with a lot of governments and Western nations where if you have corrupt officials, if they travel out, they seize any money that they have looted from their governments. So that is one step towards corruption. At the end of the day, the only people who will fight corruption themselves will be the African, the citizens of those African countries. They will have to rise up at a point, like most other great nations have done. The destiny of African nations rests now solely on the citizens of Africa.
And that is such a good answer, because one thing that I talked to you all that was on your lesson plan kind of a thing is to realize that 80% or more of the world's resources, 80% or more of all the oil, gold, diamonds, all that kind of stuff is in Africa. And so you would ask yourself, why, with all of those amazing natural resources, are they not like one of the most powerful continents in the whole world? And he said, it's, you know, we want to focus on the medical and all the other things, but I guess what he's saying is that it has to first start with getting rid of that corruption, and that the people are going to have to rise up. I'd like to ask you, before Upton has another question, why, when the colonialists put together these countries and they had to put a dictator over them to rule these people with a strong arm, were the people just not ready to have democracy?
At the time, all the people wanted was for the colonial powers to leave. I don't think they really knew the ramifications about what will happen after they left.
Okay.
So I think another thing about democracy, though, is people grow into it. It's not like what's going on in Iraq. It's a classic case, right? You want democracy for people who are not, who might not be ready for it. It's immaturity. People grow into it.
To be self-governing.
Exactly. Self-governing. You before a child is allowed to buy, go out and fend for himself or herself, he grows to it. At age 18, the child would have reached maturity. Democracy, too, is a level of maturity.
Okay.
And I think at a point, a lot of African countries were just not ready for a democracy and didn't really even think about the concept. All they were happy about was just get the colonial powers out. And now they're now dealing with the real issues.
Reaping it.
Yeah.
Okay, Upton, great question. Another question, Upton Middle School.
Yes, we do have another one.
Is there anything the American nations can do to help is there anything the United Nations can help Africa fight?
Can they send peacekeeping forces or aid, or what can they do?
I mean, when you say help, there are so many areas that African countries need help with. If you're saying, if the question is with regard to the war, again, I think the war is there. It's only the people there who can solve their. At the end of the day, they will have to be the ones to solve their problems. They just have to be the ones to solve their problems. I think, too, that there is now an African Union. Maybe what will have to happen is maybe the United Nations may have to support or arm the African Union to quash or stop some of the problems or conflicts in a place like Sudan. That may be what it comes down to at the end of the day. But the African people will have to solve their own problems. We can't keep running for help. We have to solve our problems.
Thank you, Upton. Lancaster, Minnesota, can you unmute your mic and ask a couple of questions?
We don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll come back. Maybe you'll have some later. Batavia, Ohio, do you have a couple of questions?
Yes, we do. We have a couple of questions. First of all, you've talked about the corruption under the dictators. You've talked about the humanitarian issues and all that. But there is a UN agency called the Economic and Social Council. Now, I was wondering if they had taken any steps to work with the African nations, as their goals state that they're dedicated to promoting humanitarian rights and civil liberties worldwide. And I was just wondering if they'd taken any steps to fulfill that.
Well, like you said, they are there to encourage. It's not an enforcement arm. They are just there to encourage. They have listed they've taken steps to advise the government. Like, they say, the IMF, the World Trade. I don't know if you were aware at the time, a lot of African nations were begging for debt forgiveness.
Yes.
And the World Trade Organization, the IMF, they did a pretty good job in that they said, before we forgive your debt, you're going to have to implement some policies. You know, they have the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, which says, for every, for instance, a lot of oil companies, for every purchase of oil, they have to state explicitly how much was paid, and the governments of the African nations too must state publicly how much they received. So those are initiatives or steps, but it will take time to catch on, and it's going to be a question of years for us to see whether these initiatives will catch on, or what the progress will be, or the effects will be on the African countries. Because these things are just new, you know, there's just a new initiative over the past 3 or 4 years. So we'll wait and see.
Thank you. Okay, another question, Batavia, Ohio.
Yes, we have another question.
How much does the African culture influence the corruption that's in the government?
That's an excellent
wow,
question.
Wow, very insightful question.
Yes, very, very excellent question. yes. Two things. I have tried to study that particular question, or find answers to that particular question. If you had two families, right? One family is blessed with resources, very, very wealthy. And you had another family that was struggling to make ends meet or to succeed. I think you will find that in the family blessed with resources, the children may not be as aggressive or as resourceful as the family that is not as blessed with resources. Mm-hmm. So I think the culture of African countries is the culture of a family that is blessed with a lot of resources. If you look through human history, the great nations, the empires we talk about today, the Romans, the Greeks, a lot of them were really not blessed with natural resources. It made them aggressive. They had to make things work. Now, in a nation with so much resources, it sort of breeds indolence, I think, where people just, you know, it's there. No matter what, you always have something. You have the oil, the diamonds. So what happens, I think, for that reason, because if the people had to work to work for their resources, right, they will be more interested in how their leaders perform. Because if I had to go to the farm, bring out the yams, the cassava, had to put in my sweat, and then only for the government to take my source or my means of livelihood, before you know it, the whole community will rise up against such a government. But in a situation where, you know, the people don't have to work, all the leaders need to do is, you know, you have a plot of land, you tell people, you know, go drill it for oil. It really doesn't affect the populace directly. And I think that that's what, that may be a cultural tilt. And then also too, in the African society, we have a lot of strata, as in, you know, you have the elders and the younger ones should respect the elders, the council of chiefs, you know, you always have to give them some kind of offerings or something to appease them. So maybe that's also the culture that is playing itself out. Maybe it's, for them, it might not be corruption. You know, if you, like I know, like if you, in my village where I'm from, if you wanted to get a plot of land, you know, you go to the king or the chief and say, look, you know, I need a plot of land. But before you go and talk to the chief, you have to take gifts to him. You have to take yams, you have to take goats, you have to, and then before you get to talk to him, right?
It's like a bribe.
It looks like a bribe, right? from another cultural perspective. But to them, it's an offering. It's that's what you have to bring it to the chief first. But then it has snowballed into something even bigger, greater, and that is corruption on a much higher level. And that is what we face, because the presidents of African countries see themselves as chiefs, unquote. You know, so maybe it's a cultural thing, but as time goes on, with education, with a lot of education and people with different ideas or perspectives like myself and a lot of, because during the dictatorships in Nigeria up until the mid-1990s, a lot of Nigerians left Nigeria and a lot of us are now going back. And so a lot of us will take what we've learned from here back home and we'll hope to make things or make a change with what is going on now in Africa and Nigeria.
Thank you. Okay, now let's go to Williamstown, New Jersey for a couple of questions.
Yes, we do have a question.
Great.
We're probably only going to get two to start.
Do you think you want to go back to Africa?
Oh, I'm going back in June. And I knew
when
I
you
was
get
going
back,
back
to when
I,
you get back to Africa, what will you be doing?
When I get back, I plan to do a couple of things. I hope to start writing. I hope to start to do a lot of writing. I realized African culture, for some reason, we do not put things in writing. We're starting to, but I hope to reinforce it or to push for an awareness in that a lot of, there's a term, they call them groits. And African culture, we normally pass information through word of mouth. So I think that has affected a lot of us or the new generation or generations, because we don't have anything written. And to know about oneself, you must know about your history. So I think it's high time we start writing. I'm going to start to push for that. I'm going to push for a cultural awareness. I hope to push for a positive political and social change in Nigeria and in West Africa. That's my hope. And I hope it will come to fruition.
Thank you. Okay, did you have another question, Williamstown?
Any others?
I think it'll be first, okay.
No, not at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Golden Valley, Minnesota, do you have questions? Golden Valley, if you'll unmute your mic.
Button again. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Golden Valley, do you have a question?
The mic is muted on their end.
My media tech says your mic is muted on your end.
Now can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so we had it wrong. Okay, go ahead. Come on up here.
Okay.
And our student was in the back. She's going to come close.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so my question is more about the education.
Right.
And I was going to ask, is it possible for the nation's government to send whoever works there that's educated to teach children that are less privileged so they can get an education, because they already are have enough money kind of supporting their families so they could go and teach the less privileged?
We have public schools, but the problem again is that those public schools are not funded as well. There is now a push, at least I know in Nigeria and some other West African countries, for education. So we are the whole infrastructure at this point is really, it's almost collapsed, as a matter of fact. But I think now people are beginning to realize the importance of education. So there's that push. So with the natural resources, people are now pushing for a strong educational system. So in coming years, I hope that the educational system will be up to par, at least at the university level.
Thank you. Okay, another question, Golden Valley?
Okay. Okay, you said that a lot of the conflict in Africa is because certain countries are refusing to separate from others.
Yes.
So I was wondering if it would be possible to develop a form of trade in African countries so that then the certain regions wouldn't be reliant on others.
Sit down one more time.
Like, I was wondering if it would be possible to develop a form of trade in African countries so that... Okay.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, trade within the countries.
That's a wonderful
excellent question.
Excellent question. It's an excellent question. This is the problem. Because, like I told you, when you have if you have a family with so much resources, no one thinks anymore, right? Everybody just relies on the natural resources. Nobody is thinking now about being innovative where you have to trade. So, I mean, why stress yourself trading when you have the oil in the ground, right? That's the problem. That's the problem. I think it will take for people who are fortunate like myself to go back and push for what you just said. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now let's go to Newark, Ohio. St. Francis de Sales for a couple of questions. Unmute your mic.
Unmute your mic. Anyone have a question?
If every ethnic group had their own country, do you think it would solve more problems in Africa?
If every ethnic group had its... Well, that's
own country.
Well, this is what I think will happen if that were the case. You're going to go back to a period of almost ancient times, in that we will now have invasions. You're going to have, you know, like what the Romans did, going to invade the Gauls, the French, the British. So what will happen is that those ethnic groups will start to fight wars. I think there will be more wars, but there will also be a calm after the storm. What will happen is you're going to have the poorer ethnic groups invade the wealthier ethnic groups, and with time, maybe over 100 years or 200 years, you now have a strong nation. But if that were the case, like you just suggested, we will still have another 200 or 250 years war. And then after that, a strong country or nation or continent will emerge with one power at the center of it.
Thank you. Another question, Newer?
Chris? How are the living conditions in Africa when you were there?
Well, it's the thing about... There's a key difference within African nations and what we are accustomed to here. The difference is this. Over here, you have a strong middle class. The government or the country tries to push for a strong middle class. But in African nations, you have the wealthy and then the poor. So it depends on what perspective you're looking at it from. You know, the wealthy can afford to provide themselves with everything they need, right? They get generating sets for electricity. They dig or drill the ground to bring or provide water, you know, drinking water for themselves. If they have health problems, they fly out to give themselves medical treatment.
Got a speaker down on the bottom, right?
And they have, you know, satellite dish. They can watch and they see everything going on all over the world. So, I mean, in Nigeria, it depends on whose perspective, who you ask.
Depends on if you're rich or poor.
Exactly. Simply put.
Because I know we were talking before he came. It is true today that more than 50% of Africans in the continent do not have access to safe water. They don't have access to safe sanitation practices. That just blows my mind in 2007. Yeah. With all these natural resources, 80% of the whole Earth's resources is in Africa, and they can't even do clean drinking water. And so you have to ask yourself, what is going on? And it all goes back to this corruption thing and this class system. Yeah. And what a blessing it is that we do have a strong middle class, right. That the rich and the poor, why cannot the rich, why do they not see the plight of the poor and reach down and help them pull up and form a middle class?
No one is thinking. No one is thinking.
It's sad. Okay, we're going to have one final question from each of the schools. This has been a wonderful video conference. Linwood Public School in Lincoln, New Hampshire, do you have a question? Unmute your mic.
Yes, we have one question.
Okay.
I'm a little confused by your message. Should we, as the United States, cut off all aid from Africa and close all our borders and just let them take care of themselves? Is that what you're...
Is that your message?
I'm not... There is no one solution. A careful balance must be struck in that, we can't take either or approach. My message is the United States should be more careful or should think more about the long-term effects. It's not a bandage approach. You know, if you have a child who is not serious with school or doing what he or she should do, you shouldn't have the parents continuously following the child, trying to make explanations for the child, right? At one point, you have to tell the child, look, you have to be responsible for your own actions. And that's what I'm saying. And as much as the parent tells the child, you have to be responsible for your own actions, the parent must still be there to watch the child and give useful guidance for the betterment of the child and for the family. The family now being the world family, the child being the African nations, the parent being the United States and the United Nations. Thank you. It's been a wonderful dialogue.
Thank you. All right, Upton Middle School, do you have a final question? St. Joseph, Michigan.
Yes, we do. I have a question about international law. Is there an international law in place that would pull a corrupt dictator from power?
No, you have to respect the sovereign rights of nations. As a matter of fact, my field is international law. You have to respect sovereign rights of nations. You cannot pull a president from power in his own country or from his own country. However, there is now a push under international law to seize the assets or the funds of corrupt leaders after they leave government if such funds are found in foreign accounts like the United States bank accounts, the Swiss accounts, or the British accounts. So that's a wonderful step that is in the right direction, I think. So what's going to happen now is even if you steal, or when those leaders steal the funds, they still have to use the funds in their own country. And hopefully, things will get better.
Thank you. Okay, Lancaster, Minnesota, do you have a final question? Lancaster, if you'll unmute your mic. Lancaster, last call. Okay. Lancaster, are you trying? Okay. Batavia, Ohio, do you have a last question?
Yes, we do.
Do you think things like product Red can help with the health care to help Africa focus more on the corruption than having to worry about healthcare of AIDS and HIV?
I didn't get that question. Bro.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? He didn't understand it.
Do you think things like the product Red can help with healthcare by taking care of like healthcare have help with Africa focus more on the taking care of corruption because they're helping with the HIV/AIDS and?
Are you saying product Red?
Yeah, it's a company that donates money to Africa for.
It's like big at the Gap and stuff like that.
Oh, like from when you buy things at the Gap and things like that, it's supposed to, it gives money to Africa to help with AIDS.
With AIDS, the question is, you know, it's treatment. You know, there's no cure, as we know. Again, it's going to boil down to education. The masses must be educated to know the reason and the cause of AIDS. Product Red, they are doing their part. You know, they are doing their part. I don't think we should stop them from doing what they are doing, but they are doing their part. But again, the people of Africa and their leaders have to take responsibility at a point with the guidance from the West.
Thank you. All right, Williamstown, New Jersey. I'm trying to race through this. I'm sorry because we've got other schools getting ready to dial in. Williamstown, New Jersey.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do have a question.
Okay.
When you go back to Africa, do you plan on being a leader in the future?
Do I plan on being a leader?
Being a leader in the future.
I plan to, you know, leadership is service. You know, I plan to serve. Now, whether that translates to leadership remains another question. It will remain for the people of my country and for Africa to determine. But I plan to serve my people and to serve Africa and the world at large.
Thanks. Wonderful. Okay, next question. Golden Valley, Minnesota. Do you have a final question? Golden Valley?
Hey, this is Golden Valley. We are just in a class transition time because you've got another one starting again at 10 o'clock, right?
That's right. Well, thank you so much. All right.
We've got a whole new group of kids. We'll join you again at 10.
All right. Fabulous. Okay, St. Francis de Sales in Newark, Ohio, you have the final question of the morning.
How has AIDS affected Africa so far?
Pardon?
How has AIDS affected Africa so far?
Well, I think it has definitely ravaged certain regions of Africa, East Africa, South Africa. Like any epidemic, you know, it has a damaging effect on the workforce, on the populace, and from that perspective, it's done a lot of damage, I think.
Especially, lots of children are left home as orphans because of their parents dying. And it's been said that it's wiping out like a generation of people in many of the African countries. On that note, next Thursday, same place here at the virtual school, we have a video conference called Into Africa and the AIDS Crisis. And that's going to be presented by some Vanderbilt students that went to Uganda this last summer and worked in an AIDS clinic. And they're going to be here to share their story. There's 20 Vanderbilt students. I don't think all 20 are coming, but a few Vanderbilt students. And so we hope you can join us then. Thank you so much for being with us today. This has been very insightful.
Definitely.
I appreciate it very much. And all the students really appreciate it. Teachers, if you will fill out your evaluation form, we appreciate that. And we're looking for new ideas and new suggestions for next fall as I plan that curriculum. So if you have any suggestions, you can shoot me an email on that too. Thank you again for joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.